You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, making friends as an adult can be tough, but friendships are critical to our well-being. A psychologist shares the science of making friends when you're a grown-up. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, it can feel like we have more access to political leaders today than we've ever had in the past. If you hop online, you can reply to a tweet from the President of the United States or hear from them directly on Facebook or YouTube or you name it. But is online engagement the same thing as civic engagement? Our next guest took a closer look at that question and how the digital world has reshaped American politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you engage with politicians online? Do you do politics one way or another on social media? Do you follow elected officials or candidates? Or would you like to hear less of them when you turn on your phone or your computer? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Elizabeth Losch is a professor of English and American Studies at William and Mary. She's the author of several books, including her latest. It's called Selfie Democracy, The New Digital Politics of Disruption and Insurrection. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be here.
One of the things that really struck me about the book is how much things have changed. You started in about 2008, and the Obama campaign is this innovative thing where they send a personal text or email to somebody, and people are excited. Like, wow, they're reaching out to me directly. Now, here we are just 14 years later, and we're like, enough with all the personal text from politicians. Can you talk about, first of all, just what a moving target this is in the political world?
Yeah, it's certainly during the start of the Obama administration, there was a lot of optimism about how technology could bring us more direct digital democracy. And there were these promises that you could be connected to the president, that you could participate in crafting legislation and policy, that you would have all kinds of new forms of access, and that data would be more transparent than it ever has been before. They promised to kind of get rid of all these intermediaries standing between you and your political leaders. And that optimism really turned around in the last decade. I think partly because the overreach of big tech companies running search and social media brands obviously are compromising our privacy and probably our free speech as well, and certainly our decision-making capacities. So I think that this kind of Obama optimism about technology really had took a darker turn. And I think Trump really took advantage of that. Although in the book, I argue that Obama and Trump actually have a lot in common.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Obviously very different in many ways, but that idea that you were just talking about of, hey, I'm a politician and I have this way to reach out directly to voters and the media doesn't get to interpret it or put context around it or critique it. That's going to be very tempting, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can bypass journalists, you can bypass elected representatives, you can bypass all kinds of gatekeepers who otherwise control your message. So it's very appealing. I think the other very appealing aspect is you can really slice and dice the data and you can make very specific targeted appeals to people, often drawing on their own user-generated content for social media.
What does that mean for us, though, as voters, if we have this, you know, direct outreach from a President Obama or a President Trump? Is it a net gain for us?
I argue that in a lot of ways, it undermines our trust in other forms of representative government, and that we have a tendency to invest too much authority in the leader of the executive branch. And we're not fully developing our civic identities because we're kind of relying on this sort of big celebrity persona that we're relating to through showing our own proximity or kind of feelings of connection to that person.
We're talking to Elizabeth Losch about her new book. It's called Selfie Democracy, The New Digital Politics of Disruption and Insurrection. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Prescott is with us in Lake Geneva. Prescott, hi.
Hey, you know what? I just wanted to bring up another point about the celebrity politics, and that's kind of what the games turn into, to where they can create these clickbait, you know, Twitter posts that really engage their followers, and they get reposts, and I think it's poor for politics and politicians, because now it's just become a chanting game so much, and just to rile up the whole nation, and you're losing touch with people in your representative community.
Prescott, thanks for the call. Elizabeth Prescott brings up, I think the quality of the communication we get from politicians who might be, you know, trying to get clicks like an influencer, not trying to serve us as an elected representative.
Yeah, Prescott makes a great point about the relationship between kind of clickbait and some of these forms of digital communication. It was funny to be researching the book and notice how much the style of presidential Twitter changed from the beginning with Obama to the end with Trump, because Obama often wouldn't actually kind of give us a soundbite that could move through the news cycle on Twitter. So there would be a link to a policy document that would be shared on Twitter, while Trump really had these sort of punchy headlines in his tweets that circulated through the media ecosystem much more rapidly. He was kind of a genius at live tweeting different kinds of public and political events.
Thanks for that call, Prescott, at 800-642-1234. Part of the story you tell is about how the media did, the reporting type media did and didn't keep up with what happened on social media. And that question is like, is a presidential tweet, you know, newsworthy? Does it deserve an article? Can you talk about efforts of the traditional media to understand this new political social media landscape?
Yeah, I think the traditional media still struggles to adequately cover what's going on in social media. I think just things like the ways the media covers TikTok, which I write about toward the end of the book when I'm writing about the Biden-Kamala Harris campaign, certainly shows its inadequacies. But, you know, one of the interesting things about the ways that the media covered social media from the presidential candidates is that they often wanted to project a particular kind of presidential authority. So, for example, Donald Trump used emojis hundreds of times in his tweets, and yet you would never, ever see those tweets on the network news. It was always something that was much more in keeping with the network news cycle that would get reposted. So in the book, I do a kind of deep dive on the kinds of tweets, you know, Trump composed over 50,000 tweets, right? There are a lot of tweets there. And I try to kind of look at the kinds of tweets that don't get media coverage. And yet those tweets might be very important to his followers. It's a way to build that community around the Trump message.
You also talk about that idea of digital communities, or at least what feel like communities that can form around a candidate, a political identity, or even conspiracy theories. And again, this is something that's really changing in the period you're covering, still changing now. Talk about what you see in these communities.
Yeah, I mean, and that's another thing that Trump did with Twitter very successfully, is sort of hinting at a potential conspiracy without actually sort of stating its premises or any, you know, supporting evidence about it. And I think that's, one of the features of these conspiracy theories is they often, you know, use partial information as a way to get people emotionally invested in a particular kind of story. But it's funny that, Barack Obama began his political career by creating a personalized social media platform, mybarackobama.com. And now we see Trump with his own social media platform, Truth Social, which, of course, has had some challenges in the marketplace because it doesn't moderate the content that might be tied to some of those conspiracy theories.
We're talking to Elizabeth Losch, professor of English and American Studies at William & Mary, with us today to talk about her new book. It's called Selfie Democracy, The New Digital Politics of Disruption and Insurrection. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How have you seen the internet and social media changing our politics? Do you converse with people online about politics? Do you argue with people online about politics? Have you seen a positive outcome, a way that social media helped you connect and maybe make a difference in the world? Or do you see nothing but negative? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Elizabeth Losch about her new book, Selfie Democracy, the New Digital Politics of Disruption and Insurrection. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you do politics online? Do you converse? Do you argue on social media? Have you had to block people on social media because of political discussions spiraling downhill? Are you, in this midterm election season, overwhelmed by all the ads, all the emails from candidates and campaigns and outside groups? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Elizabeth, one of the things you talk about in your solutions chapter toward the end of your book is changing our culture of what we mean by civic participation in the digital media age. What kind of ideas do you hope start to take hold?
Well, I've also studied activists. My last book was actually about hashtags and the ways that people can get their messages out using social media by using hashtags more effectively. And I think there's a lot that we can learn from looking at the world of activism and the ways that people try to manage their own visibility and get a little more control over some of these tech companies. I do think that even though we're a very polarized nation, I think that both Democrats and Republicans agree that something has to be done about the power of these companies. We're talking about how Google and Facebook and Amazon and Apple really do have an outsized influence on our democratic processes. And I think finding that common ground can be difficult because people on the left are much more worried about misinformation, while people on the right are much more worried about censorship. But I think we still can find some common ground when it comes to not only regulating these companies, but also educating ourselves more effectively.
Well, let's take each of those points in turn. First of all, where do you see potential common ground for regulations? And we would need common ground, I think, in Congress to make it happen, for regulations on some of these big social media and search companies.
Well, even though the convenience of customization is something that many Americans have become used to, I think most Americans are getting pretty concerned about their privacy. And so I think that we can actually look to what's happening in other countries, particularly countries in the European Union, as a way to think about ways that we could get more control over how our data is used, and particularly how it's sold to third parties.
And then you said kind of on a more personal level, this isn't something you can do with the law. What kind of thing do you hope that people who use social media are thinking about, are filtering when they're looking at the online political world?
Well, I think that we can all benefit from thinking critically about our own media literacy. I mean, I'm a fake news researcher, and I've fallen for fake news stories. And I think having a certain amount of humility when it comes to our ability to vet sources, I think is something really important. I mean, one of the things I say in the chapter on fake news is essentially throughout human history, there have been crises about fake news, particularly when we have new technologies. So when the radio came in, there was a lot of concern about fake news after Orson Welles' War of the Worlds broadcast. So, you know, we might be just going through another one of those times in which we need to, as a culture, as a society, think about new forms of media literacy.
Talking to Elizabeth Losch about her new book, Selfie Democracy, the New Digital Politics of Disruption and Insurrection. Still time for you to join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Elizabeth, as I mentioned earlier, we are in a political campaign season now. The topic of your book keeps on going even after the book is published. What are you seeing this year, 2022, from Republicans and Democrats that evolves the things you talked about in your book?
Well, I think one of the interesting trends is this concern about voting and concern about having ballots being properly counted when we have these digital voting machines. And I think this distrust in technology, which, you know, we certainly saw toward the end of the Trump administration, is something that I think is going to continue to be a factor in these midterms. You know, so far, we're not seeing as many kind of close elections in the primary season, although some of them have been pretty close. But I suspect that when we'll be getting into the general, we're going to be seeing a lot more concerns about can we really trust technology? And I think more concerns about the ways that social media companies might be amplifying some messages and suppressing others.
I think there was a time where we could say, oh, who cares what's happening in social media? That's just out there in the ether. The last word of your subtitle, insurrection, points in another direction. When did we start seeing sort of online communities, political communities forming themselves and showing up in person again?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to see how the insurrectionists actually were shooting selfies in the Capitol. And they were sort of seeking that direct participation. You could argue that, you know, during the Tea Party movement, we also saw a lot of this sort of showing up in person, showing up at town hall meetings, showing up at school board meetings, this sort of need to kind of physically be present. But often that physical presence is in response to a digital call to action. So people get a social media post that encourages them to show up at a particular place, and then they shoot images for social media, or they film the event. And so there's this sort of cycle where social media tells us to be present and show up at a particular time and place and in a face-to-face, in-person interaction. And then we document our presence there. We make ourselves visible. And that goes back to the social media ecosystem. And I don't know if we can really disentangle ourselves from social media completely. I'm not one of these people who says, you know, we all need to essentially throw our smartphones in the garbage can. But what I would like to see is more transformation from that in-person interaction as well. And for those in-person interactions not to be so homogenous, for us to be able to, you know, have more diverse coalitions where we're coming together over common causes.
I think, and you touch on this in the book, there's this ideal that, you know, once upon a time, we all had this civic participation. We came together as communities to vote, or at least to voice our grievances in civil ways. I don't know, is this a mythical golden age, or is there something in the past you would hope we could come back to?
Well, I mean, one of the sections of the book, which talks about Obama's digital town halls, does point out, drawing on the scholarship of others, that town halls have sort of never been this kind of idealized performance of civics. But I do think that there are ways that we can do a little bit better. And I think that, you know, there are a lot of cases in the book where well-meaning digital initiatives got taken over by trolls or conspiracy theorists or other people. But I do think that the power of petitioning and the power of in-person protest really can be transformative. I think if you look back on the history of American politics, you'll see that people have managed to effect major changes by virtue of making themselves visible in different kinds of public spaces.
Let's bring on a caller. Steve is with us in Madison. Steve, hi.
Oh, hi, yes. A statement and a question is why the FCC has more regulation on CB radios than any internet regulation. I just bought a CB radio last year for fun, for driving around Madison and on the highways around Madison, and it's been kind of fun, you know, to note an accident or something, and it just seems like we're just all bent out of shape on the internet. No civility.
Steve, 10-4. Thanks for the call. Steve pointing toward the internet maybe being under-regulated. Elizabeth, what do you think?
That's definitely true. I think that because this is a newer technology, there's been a tendency to sort of give it a pass and hope that it contributes enough to our information economy that we'll sort of let it develop without regulation. But as Steve points out, older technologies are much more regulated. Now, the other problem, there's sort of the too little, too late problem with regulation. The Obama administration did have close relationships with Google, close relationships with Facebook, and, you know, really often sort of had a more optimistic and utopian view of technology that made it reluctant to regulate those technologies. And the other thing is the role of lobbyists, because far too often when we're looking at the FCC, what we're seeing is people moving from being lobbyists for cable internet providers, for social media companies. They're coming into the FCC, and then they're going back out into the world of lobbying. And this has happened with both Republican and Democratic administrations.
Steve, thanks for that call. And Elizabeth, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Elizabeth Losch, professor of English and American Studies at William and Mary, with us today to talk about her new book. It's called Selfie Democracy, The New Digital Politics of Disruption and Insurrection.